Just want to make sure the choir loft mics are working, speakers. Got to keep that choir happy. We're in the midst of a trio of sermons in the Gospel of John, so don't forget that this is most likely a gospel written later than the other three gospels in the New Testament. Thus, this Easter empty tomb story that we run with today is really late breaking news in the early Christian church, probably 90 CE or so. And that's probably why John's version is so different. He starts in the dark, while all the other three versions start in the early morning light. John, or the Johannine community, write of Mary Magdalene being the only woman at the tomb, as opposed to several women at the tomb on that first Easter morning. And in John's version of the gospel, the empty tomb setting is in the midst of a garden, perhaps giving hints of this new creation idea that is unfolding on this first resurrection morning. And what about all this running? There's no other gospel story that has so much huffing and puffing and panting in it. It just makes you wheeze as you're reading the text even this morning. Verse 1, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. And if she had a thought bubble, it might say, robbers! Verse 2, so she ran. She ran to Simon Peter and the other disciple, and we can't assume that they were lodging in the same place around Jerusalem on that crazy weekend that had just gone by. So this might have been a 2.30-minute run for Mary in the dark or just in the early dusk. And the disciples, probably agreeing with Mary that the body had been stolen, they start to run. They leave Mary in the dust, and then they begin what seems to be this foot race to the empty tomb. Verse 4, we read that the two were running together, but the disciple outran Peter. And though the other disciple gets there first, he doesn't go in. But Peter, you know, bull in the china shop, Peter, goes in. And not to be outdone by Peter's boisterous entrance into the empty tomb, we read in verse 8, then the other disciple who had reached the tomb first, lest you forget, also went in and saw and believed. And just so we don't get distracted by all this jockeying for position between Peter and the other disciple, who we'll assume is John, it's important to note that John's literary reminders about his speed and his fantastic belief, they're probably inserted in there intentionally. Because remember, this is a 90 CE document, and maybe John and the Johannine community want to make sure that John's gospel is going to be legit among the other gospels of Luke, Matthew, and Mark. Last week, Jeremy was saying, if I was a filmmaker. And I thought, well, this week, if I was a musical writer, there'd be a musical interlude here. John, Peter. John looks at Peter. Anywhere you can run, I can run faster. I can run anywhere faster than you. Any cloth you can see, I can see better. I believe any cloth better than you. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. And remember, I was the beloved disciple laying his head on Jesus' bosom during the Last Supper. Yes, I can. And the lights fade out, because really it's not about these two guys on this first resurrection morning. And we read in verse 10 that they're quickly shuttled off the scene. They go home. Pave the way for the apostle of all apostles. This woman who would be the first one to see the resurrected Christ. This first eyewitness to the resurrection. Mary. Mary Magdalene. This side character, this two-bit role player, quietly devoted to her Lord. And in the midst of sadness and sorrow, is the first one who wants to pay homage to Christ's dead body on the first day of the week. And when she gets back to the tomb, all she can do is weep. And maybe this is the best place to plunk ourselves into the world of this gospel text today, as ordinary people. Because none of us would probably self-describe as superheroes this morning. We probably don't have our act together. And we all come into this place perhaps as needy people, needy of others, a need to belong, in need of grace, in need of a kind word, an encouraging word, a welcoming face, a welcoming presence. And perhaps some of us even come into this place really broken this morning, in places of doubt, places of struggle, places of shame, pain, sorrow, or loss. And the good news, as we plunk ourselves into this story with Mary today, is that it is in these places that a living God likes to show up. And for Mary, in the midst of her sadness and desolation, she has two remarkable revelations. The first one is this: she sees and hears angels. It's fascinating that Peter and John don't get to see angels, but Mary does. And I don't want to get too angelology crazy on you, but I think it's important for us to pause and notice that angels show up to comfort us in our time of need. Have you ever had an angel moment? I hope that this empty tomb story gives you permission to reflect on the reality of a God who loves and cares for us so much that he might send angels our way when we're in places of tears or sorrow or being overwhelmed. And these voices might speak to us in a calming voice that say questions like, "Why are you weeping?" This isn't a condescending, critical tone of the angels. It's what Frederick Dale Bruner in his commentary in John calls an angelic pastoral word. He writes, "The best thing to do with a grieving person is to enter her or his space with heart." The best thing to do with a grieving person is to enter her or his space with heart, which is exactly what these two angels do. But let's remember, this story doesn't end with angels, because angels are always pointing us to the glory of God. And in the midst of Mary's angelic encounter, she responds to these angels and then is turned around to see the living Christ. And this, of course, is the second and most profound revelation of the day. She sees and hears a gardener. A gardener. The firstborn of all creation isn't mistaken as a lawyer, a sage, a philosopher, a religious leader, but a gardener. And this gardener echoes the same words that the angel does. These pastoral, caring, compassionate words, "Why are you weeping?" And Mary, who, remember, thinks that the body was stolen, she's weepy, she's exhausted, she looks at this gardener, and she probably thinks, "This is the robber." And yet she politely says, "If you've carried him away, thought bubble, you stinking thief, tell me where you've laid him, so I will take him away." And the God and gardener of all creation can no longer hold it in. He lovingly and knowingly calls out her name. And I thought that old beautiful hymn puts it so beautifully, and heaven came down and glory filled her soul. This God who lives in community, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, mysteriously and powerfully descends upon Mary in that moment. And her eyes are open to this new reality, and she is forever changed. And the world is forever changed. And she leaps into his embrace for moments, minutes. Think long embrace here. And then this strange phrase in verse 17. Do not hold on to me because I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go. And this isn't Jesus being annoyed with her or pushing her away or some of the crazy interpretations of the story that I read this week. This isn't Jesus naked and saying, go away, don't look, I'm having a moment here. This is the resurrected Jesus saying, it doesn't just all end here, Mary. There's more to this story. Go, I send you. Tell this good news to my brothers, to the disciples. And we read more of this in next week's sermon text where Jesus says to his disciples, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. And so he sends Mary to go. And I would imagine that Mary doesn't just slowly saunter off. What do you think she does? I think she runs. She runs to the disciples. And she doesn't say this classic Easter phrase, he is risen, but she says, I have seen the Lord. And so as we move into this 50-day season of Easter, you're going to hear several of us, the Biblical Preaching Project people and some of us ministry staff, inviting you to share what I'm calling STL stories. Yes, another acronym. Seen the Lord. And over the next 6 weeks, we're looking for people who might just share. Or maybe they'll write down their stories and we'll read them on your behalf. But a 3 or 4 minute story of where is the resurrection happening in our life together? If there is a living God in our midst, in the person of a living Christ who shows up, then what does that sound like? What does that look like? What does that feel like in story? And so for the next 6 Sundays in Easter, we want to hear one story a week. And maybe this will be the yearly rhythm of our church. During the season of Easter, we'll share resurrection stories. So next Sunday, everybody, we need a story. And so you can email me or any of the Biblical Preaching Project people and share a resurrection story. Let us run with the resurrection and tell one another how we are being surprised, how we are being shocked, how we are being amazed, how we are being named by a living God. Lots of options there. I was thinking this past week, gone are the days of us Christians called to prove resurrection through clever debates or brilliant arguments. Instead, we share our life stories. We say, he's risen indeed, and here's how he lives through me in my story. The Apostle Paul names us as letters. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, he says, you show that you are a letter from Christ, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of the human hearts. And so God's writing his story on our hearts, even this day and in the 50-day season of Easter. So might we be inspired to share our stories. And I want to remind you that as you share your story, remember that this isn't us trying to come up with hero stories or doing things in our own strength. A 16th century saint, Francis de Sales, reminds us to start small and to start gently. And I'll close with this quote. He writes, don't lose any opportunity, however small, of being gentle toward everyone. Don't rely on your own efforts to succeed in your various undertakings, but only on God's help. then rest in his care of you, confident that he will do what is best for you, provided that you will, for your part, work diligently but gently. I say gently because a tense diligence is harmful both to our heart and to our task, and is not really diligence, but over-eagerness and anxiety. I recommend you to God's mercy. I beg him through that same mercy to fill you with his love. So as we start our Easter season run with the resurrected Christ, let's do it small. Let's start gently. But let's also come back with stories where we share with one another in the days and weeks ahead how we, along with Mary, have seen the Lord. I'm going to give you 60 seconds of silence to start your jaunt, to maybe warm up, to reflect on what might be the beginning of your seeing the Lord story in the days ahead. 60 seconds of silence, and then I'll close with prayer. A closing prayer from the Iona community. Lord of life, you walk this journey with us and through us. Lead us, Lord. Lead on. Journeying within and wrestling with the world, lead us, Lord. Lead on. Lead us to risk, to grow, and to tread the path you have opened for us. Lead us, Lord. Lead on. And let us rejoice that every place is your place. In the name of Christ, the risen one. Amen.